The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Hi, everybody. Welcome on in. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy on the Brad Sesmat Show. I have so much to get to. ASU, U of A, the Cardinals, the Suns are kicking off. We also have the MLB playoffs. So much going on. And usually October is an incredible sports month. In terms of the content, it certainly is. In terms of the weather, yikes. Hopefully we can get under 100 here quickly, and then the sports scenes becomes that much better. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you and taking care of your business. So let's get things started with the Arizona Cardinals over the San Francisco 49ers, 24-23. Just like we all predicted, right? This was a weird game. Both teams had kicking issues. Both were very limited due to injury in that department. The 49ers, pardon the pun, literally punted on the kicking efforts at certain times. And I think that was a really a handcuff for them. But the Cardinals able to come back 14 unanswered points in the second half, shut the 49ers out in that second half. Really, you know, it was a great turnaround game, because the way that 49ers, or excuse me, that Commanders game went last week. Yes, when you look at this Cardinals team, and even dating back to last year, especially last year, there is a talent deficit. I feel like the Cardinals have made some good steps this offseason into this year, but you still see that. You know, when you're going toe-to-toe against the 49ers, you're going to see some differences in roster. And that speaks a little bit to the Cardinals, also speaks a little bit to the 49ers. But when you're playing a team that had the number two overall pick last year, rookie QB and Jaden Daniels, and he just throws all over you. And it wasn't even necessarily that. It was that you didn't see that usual fire from these Jonathan Gannon teams last Sunday. We certainly saw that on Sunday against the 49ers. They were down 23-10. Like I said, able to turn it around. They got the run game going. And so much of that, I think, goes hand in hand with this team's identity. I think you're still seeing an evolving identity for this Cardinal team. But you saw things that they can certainly rest on week in and week out. And we're going to have Jody Jackson on here next. Jody's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers, to discuss more of that. And we dive into what's going on with the Cardinals, what's going on with the Diamondbacks. You know, great stuff from from Jody, as always. So there's that. College football Saturday, ASU pulls out a win, another late dramatic game that ASU had, but they're able to beat Kansas. Kansas 1-5, and they felt like they were going to be in the upper third of that, even upper quarter of the conference coming into the year, and they are just struggling. That's a good football team, though, especially seeing them up close. It just kind of feels like, and obviously two very different rosters, but it just felt like, you know, when you get into some of these losing streaks or these rough patches, it's hard to get out. And it felt like there were a few times with Kansas where they should have put that game away. And ASU just hung around and hung around and hung around, and they overcame a bunch of adversity. Their two best players got called for targeting. Both, I think, were questionable calls. Even before the game, we learned after the game and post game from X Alford and Sam Levitt, about 20 to 25 guys got stuck on an elevator for close to a half hour at the team hotel before they even got to the stadium. So they had that adversity. They had the heat. They had, you know, Jordan Tyson had a couple turnovers in the first half, the number one wide receiver. Sam Levitt threw him the ball, and it just kicked off his hands, and that led to an interception in the red zone. He also had a fumble. How does he bounce back? He has two second half touchdowns that helps take the lead and get the eventual win. So this was a game, I think, the past couple years would have cracked this ASU team. Don't see that now. And this is by far, in my opinion, Sam Levitt's best game that he's had so far in his young career. The passing yard numbers aren't going to necessarily blow you away, but he had 75 rushing yards also. He created. It felt like so much it's been if the running backs, specifically Cam Scataboo, can't really get things going, then this offense is going to sputter. But it felt like Levitt was the one dictating the pace there. Had four touchdowns, could have had five, had that ball not been tipped and picked. At the very least, four touchdowns and one interception is a really good game. Four touchdowns and no interceptions is a really good game. Five touchdowns and no interceptions is an incredible game. So he is showing what he can do, and the growth there has been really impressive. And now they get rewarded with Utah at home on a short week on Friday. Utah coming off a bye, and Kenny Dillingham postgame expressed his displeasure of, he's not exactly sure how that works, where it's someone gets 13 days off and the other team gets 6 days off. And I can see his point there. I think he would try to avoid that wherever you can. But questions are going to happen with Utah as well. Cam Rising is cleared to play. He can't get velocity on the ball. That's why he hasn't played the past few weeks. And they're hoping that getting through this bye week, he'll be able to be back to where he was. And I think that's a very different game between if Isaac Wilson comes in and Cam Rising. And that's not a knock on Isaac Wilson. That's Isaac Wilson's a true freshman. Cam Rising is a seventh year player. That's just two different, that's two different languages. You know, there it's a 19 year old player versus a guy who's in his mid 20s, who's been around the block and been around the block and been around the block. So we'll have to watch out for that. But regardless, Utah is going to be a tough matchup. Arizona already went up there, able to knock them out. And that was a massive win. That was our first time doing that in a decade, going up to Utah and getting a win. ASU is going to get them at home, but again, on a short week. And then for the Wildcats, another game where it felt like they had their opportunities and things just didn't quite click. And I think there's still just a transition happening going from Jed Fish to Brent Brennan. There's a little bit of growing pains. We saw when things are working out at Utah, like massive, massive, massive win. But then you lose to a good Texas Tech team who is at the top of the Big 12 now. They did the exact same thing to ASU a couple weeks ago. But there were, you can just see probably the frustrating part for U of A fans is you can just see the opportunities where it's like, okay, get over the hump. And you didn't quite see that. Whenever they were in that position to go ahead and take the lead, there was a turnover or there was a penalty, or I think they're still trying to figure out their identity a little bit. Justin Spears of the Arizona Daily Star going to be joining us to dive in a little bit deeper on that as well. So a lot of fun here to come with Jody Jackson, with Justin Spears. And coming up next, we have Jody's Gems. And now it is time for Jody's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. We appreciate their support and appreciate Jody jumping on. And Jody, they always say you need some pressure to make a diamond. You also need to overcome some pressure on the road in the NFL to win football games. Cardinals able to do exactly that against the 49ers. What jumped out to you about this big win on the road for the Bird Gang?
Well, Jordan, it's huge. It's a big upset. And yeah, that pressure created, I guess you could say, diamonds. The Cardinals came out sparkling like my E.D. Marshall necklace that I'm wearing right now. So you know what? They were incredible. The fact that they were down and had a bunch of mishaps really happen in that game and yet had enough belief to come back. And yeah, Kyler Murray was caught on camera looking really frustrated, but weren't we all? I mean, when you think about it, that was, of course, after the blocked kick, because they didn't have Matt Prater. They had Chad Ryland, who ended up being a hero in this game. But the low trajectory of that kick earlier in the game in that first half created the blocked opportunity that went back for a touchdown. And at that point, that combined with a couple of other plays, including, you know, Trey McBride had a touchdown basically in his hands, couldn't hang on to it. We know that Kyler Murray should have seen Nick Bosa there, and he had a pick. So all of these mistakes were happening. The Cardinals found themselves down 23-10. And so the things that really stand out for me, Jordan, it's just that belief to keep fighting, because I think that's what we were disappointed in last week when they were in that game at 14-7. They were down, but then it was 17-7. And then in the third quarter, they did nothing to help themselves. We didn't really see that level of fight and belief. And I feel like we saw that. It's crazy because they come off of three home games where they dropped two of the three, and then they go on the road in this incredibly hot day. And it's just one of those things that they pulled it off. And I'm excited to see what it means for them. They're 2-3. The Niners are also 2-3 and have the Seahawks on a short week now. And I think, you know, for me, it just shows, and Mac Wilson had mentioned this after the game, that this feeling can be contagious. That's what I want to know is, are they going to be able, now that they've tasted this adversity, you know, the Rams, as great as that win was, they didn't really have a lot of adversity there. They were, you know, trouncing them. Now, does this become contagious within that group? What can we do when we're down? What happens? What's our mentality? And I love that. And I hope that they're able to turn that into something next week in Green Bay.
And something that was a bit of an outlier for him earlier in the year, Kyler Murray tucking and running. He had a huge 50-yard touchdown, ended the day 80-plus yards. We haven't seen necessarily that side of Kyler since he came back from his injury. How do you think that opens things up for the offense, just knowing the threat now that we always know that he was capable of doing it, but now putting it on film against a really good defense?
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that's key. Last week, only getting one carry for 3 yards, and, you know, Kyler Murray calling his own number, that's going to work for the Cardinals. That's going to be a recipe for success, and it was today. Obviously, the big chunk there was that 50-yarder where he had his finger in the sky pointing up and kind of celebrating right away because he knew he was going to outrun everyone. I loved how James Conner sounded a little bit concerned about that after the game, but he said, you know what, he's fast enough to know he's going to outrun everyone. So, you know, for Kyler Murray, just to see that confidence to be able to run the ball. And then there were a few unscheduled runs as well. So that was big. And I think Drew Petzing knows that too, is that that's something that has to happen for this Cardinals team. That's that added threat that helps them fulfill the type of offense they can become. And we saw it on the touchdown to Elijah Higgins, which was pivotal. That's what made this game, after, you know, 23-21, is that he sold the run very well, Kyler. And then it was bottled up, goes back, tosses the ball to Higgins, who's been a nice weapon for them as well in the tight end room. And that was a huge play as well when Kyler's, you know, selling that threat of the run and then can hurt them in the pass.
Over the past couple of years, it feels like even if you don't necessarily know how good the Cardinals are 5-6 weeks in, you know their identity. I feel like it's been hard to put our finger on the identity of this team. 5 games in, how would you describe the identity of this year's team?
Well, it's interesting. With recency bias of the game that I just watched against the Niners, I would say what I love is that Drew Petzing dialed up James Conner in the run game late in that game, and for better or worse, was continually handing the ball off to James Conner. And even one play where I noticed he ran into Higgins and I think it was McBride even too. I mean, he ran into a few of his own guys, and he still kept plowing forward. We saw him on the 2-point conversion. Talk about being his own blocker there, and he was stuffed but kept moving to the left and got into the end zone. That was huge. So I think as much as there's a lot of flash and dash here with Kyler, and we can, you know, hopefully we're going to see more with Marvin Harrison Jr. We've seen glimpses of what that looks like. I think that the toughness and the physicality, because you know what, we saw it last year as well. We saw this team pile up 200 plus yards on the ground against the Niners. It was a loss. And then in this game, you see Connor being able to run it in a win. That's much more satisfying. It really is the only thing that matters if you can pull off the win. So I think they'd like it to be the physicality, but I'm going to say stay tuned on that, Jordan, because you have to do it week in and week out to have it be your identity.
Sure. And they'll have to do it next week against Green Bay. Then they have the Chargers, the Dolphins, which seems like a much more winnable game now, the Bears, and then the Jets, who I think looks like a much more winnable game than at the beginning of the year. So this, everyone has pointed to kind of this middle stretch of the season being really crucial for success for the Cardinals this year. Just what do you make of the slate they have moving forward, and what do they need to do to get on the other side of that feeling good about where they're at?
Well, I think I'm going to tap into, and maybe it's part of the identity as well, is the defense, because what we didn't know about this matchup with the 49ers was that the defense was going to shut them out in the second half. And so that's something that I haven't even mentioned yet. That's really the reason why they won the game. I mean, really, you can't pinpoint one thing, right? I joked, who's the hero? Is it Jesse Luketta, who hadn't even played all season and strips Jordan Mason? And that's where this kind of, I think that's where the belief really built. I can look at Kaiser White, Mack Wilson, but to look at the downs, or I should say, let me look at the defense second half. Interception, turnover on downs, fumble, and that was the strip, and then the interception at the end where Purdy got hit by Jalen Thompson, and the ball, you know, because you're thinking, you're watching the very end of that game, and Brock Purdy, we all know, we've covered him since day one, a lot of us here, and he looked pretty dangerous, that first completion that he made downfield. And for the defense to step up like that, I mean, that's going to be huge next week in Green Bay. It's going to be big in this entire stretch because I think the offense is going to get better and better. What we didn't know is, can this defense be that opportunistic against a really good offense like the 49ers? So what kind of now confidence does that bring that group? We all know it's week to week, but I loved what I saw from that group. And they really, you know, they didn't give up many points today because you look at the fact that it was a blocked kick for a turnover or for a touchdown, I should say. And there were things that did not, you know, were out of the defense's control. So I like that for this stretch as well, you know, to put a lot of stock in, you know, what this defense can do, because they looked terrible last week against Washington. So maybe this was a sign of, hey, what they're capable of.
It is Jody's Gems, brought to you by ED Marshall Jewelers. We appreciate their support. Let's shift gears real quick to the D-backs. It's been about a week since their season ended. Haven't had a chance to talk to you since then. How would you describe, was that?
Sad, very sad.
Sad. Yeah. just you know, watching that last day, how it went down, how they really couldn't do anything. All they could do is watch and see how it all played out, and then how it eventually played out. Just what's your big takeaway now that we're a week removed, not only this stretch where they struggled, but the season as a whole? How do you think D-back fans should remember this 2024 season?
That's such a tough question, Jordan, because that's the thing. I mean, I made the motion of crying because, you know, look, I cover the team. I'm supposed to be unbiased. And yet you see how hard these guys work for 162 games, and they push, and they navigate through injuries, and they each day navigating different issues and game plans. And then you get to the end and you miss it based on a doubleheader that was displaced due to the hurricane, which we all feel terrible for what's been going on and what is still going on with the weather in Florida. And it just comes down to a game that, you know, where one team didn't really need it. And you hate to see that, but they put themselves in that spot. And I know that, and we all know that. And it just comes down to, could we have won one or two more games? I mean, how should they be remembered, though, is a question I think that's going to be lurking for Diamondbacks fans and for the team for a very long time, because the offense was unbelievable. And it's crazy to think, I know they didn't score as many runs as the 1999 Diamondbacks, which is kind of insane when you think about when I watching it was incredible for the really July 1 was kind of where I felt like it turned when Eugenio Suarez got hot and Corbin Carroll started turning around, and it was so much fun to watch. It was such a joy to watch these guys battle back from deficits or come up with a walk-off, come up with a grand slam. They had double-digit grand slams. That's crazy. And yet the pitching overall throughout the season is what we know through the numbers. It wasn't good. It wasn't very good. It was literally one of the worst in baseball. And, you know, when it came down to it, they failed in the final week. They lost 5 of the last 7. And against teams like the Rockies and the Giants, I guess that would be widening it out to the last 10. They lost a series in Colorado. They went 4-3 against Milwaukee, but they had that horrible loss to end the season in Milwaukee. And I've had a hard time just believing and kind of wrapping my mind around the fact that that one loss in Milwaukee could doom a team and send them spiraling downward for the final week. But in talking to coaches and players, they feel that that's what happened. And so it just shows you that baseball success can be fleeting. It can be going great in July, August, and part of September, and then just you spiral downward. And that's what we saw. But it was a very good team. They had a lot of talent on that team. And unfortunately, they just, you know, at the very end, what hurts is that the offense was not able to carry them in that final weekend against the Padres. And so it is baseball. It happens. But to come so close, 89 wins, you just do want to remember what a fun season it was and how exciting it was. And they didn't even make it into the postseason.
And I think that's the brutal side of sports is, and same example with the Suns, you know, they come off a finals run and they come back and you go, okay, a lot of the pieces are still there. In this case, on paper, the Diamondbacks were a better team this year than they were last year. But there are so many things that have to go right to not only get into the postseason, but then make that run to the World Series and, you know, create those memories. So moving forward, you know, there's already been reported changes with the pitching staff, a couple big free agents that could be coming up in Christian Walker. Zach Gallen's contract is also, I know, a topic of conversation for quite a few D-backs fans right now. But where do you see, you know, what this offseason should look like for them or could look like for them?
Well, yeah, you talk about the big changes. The pitching coaches are gone. You know, Brent Strom, who I'm watching him up close the last couple of years, is an unbelievable coach. But for whatever reason, some things were not executed this season. And, you know, we some of those were due to injury and some of those were just, you know, it comes down to a pitch here or there that equals a loss, and it just added up. And then also Mike Fetters, the bullpen coach, and Dan Carlson, who was Brent Strom's assistant and who was also with the organization for over two decades. So then you're going to see a complete leadership change there. I don't know, you know, Dan Heron has been their pitching strategist for the last few years, and I don't know if that means his role will change or if he'll continue in his current role as pitching strategist. So they're going to identify all of that. And then I think the big one is Christian Walker. You know, it's hard to imagine this team without him. He's been such a leader, such a glue guy, a guy that has had some incredible moments, has improved his defense to the point where he went from, and we all know his story, right? He never had a chance until Paul Goldschmidt was traded. The Orioles organization that he was with didn't give him a chance. He was behind Chris Davis there, behind Goldschmidt here. And the Diamondbacks, Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello, talked about how proud they are of him getting to this point. But it's going to be bittersweet if they can't keep him. I don't know. You know, I have to be honest. I really don't know what's going to happen there. He's going to cost quite a bit of money. It is a joy as a player that's worked so hard in your life to enjoy free agency and go out and get what you can get. And the highest, you know, it's got to be a fit for his lifestyle and for he and his wife and for whatever they want to do on the personal side. But money is, you know, a big part of this. And when you work so hard to become, you wait so long to be a free agent. So I don't know, but I think pitching wise, what's interesting is the personnel will pretty much remain the same. You've got Zach Gallen under contract another year. Merrill Kelly, I would assume that's going to continue with that option being, you know, it's an option he can pick up. And so, and a lot of the other names are going to be the same, but I think they can be a lot better than they were this last year. So I think this team can be a really good team again. And it's just going to be a question of how can they get to the postseason this time?
Jody, dropping gems every single week. Thanks to E.D. Marshall Jewelers. Thank you so much, Jody, for the time and the insight. Always love catching up with you.
You too, Jordan. Thanks.
Welcome on into Walking On. We are in the thick of the Big 12 schedule now, 3 weeks in to this new conference for the Arizona schools. And I wanted Justin Spears of the Arizona Daily Star, ESPN Tucson. He covers everything when it comes to Wildcat football. I wanted him to jump on with us and just kind of take a step back, look at where Arizona is, look at where ASU is, but also what's jumped out in the conference. What surprised us? What identity is this new conference? So Justin, just thanks so much for joining us, man.
Absolutely, man. Anything for you.
Yeah. So Arizona coming off a tough loss to Texas Tech, a game that they had some opportunities to go ahead and win. I can say the exact same thing when Texas Tech played Arizona State a couple weeks ago. But on both sides, the Red Raiders came away with it. What jumped out to you most about that matchup and kind of where Arizona is currently at in their process?
Well, first and foremost, I'm kind of taking a page out of the Brent Brennan book or any other coach where they come out and they give the opposing team a bunch of credit. But you do have to give Texas Tech some credit, because even though it wasn't the prettiest performance, right? We've seen the Red Raiders. They are the highest scoring team in the Big 12. They're putting up around 41 points per game. And even though they didn't have the high scoring performance like they normally have, they came out and they made all the winning plays. I thought Taj Brooks, their running back, was great in that game. And then Jacob Rodriguez, their star linebacker, who had a game high 13 tackles. He had a pass breakup that led to Noah Fafita's, one of his interceptions. And then he was the one who forced the fumble there late on Teta Roe McMillan. So I thought Texas Tech made some winning plays in that game. But Arizona, I think they might have an identity crisis on offense. And that, to me, is a little concerning, because you know, you have the best quarterback receiver tandem in college football. But what about the other guys? You know, we saw last week against Utah, the tight ends really step up, especially Keen Burnett. You know, he had a great game, had that game winning catch. And, you know, tight ends are starting to get certainly more involved in the passing game, but we're not seeing the extra guy consistently stepping up and complimenting Teta Roe McMillan. And I knew it was going to be a big loss. I didn't know it was going to be this noticeable when Arizona lost Jacob Cowing to the NFL draft. Tanner McLaughlin, the tight end for the Cincinnati Bengals, like that's another NFL player that Arizona just simply does not have right now. And through, I mean, we're approaching the first half mark of the season, and right now I can't tell you who is Arizona's go-to secondary guy in the passing game. It's just been Noah Fafita and Teta Roe McMillan. And you can honestly kind of see that Noah is starting to force the issue a little bit with T-Mac. It's start to force him the ball regardless of coverage. You know, that second interception, I think there was double coverage there, and it just was not a good throw by Noah Fafita. So Noah Fafita had, in my opinion, his worst game as a Wildcat this past week against Texas Tech. His lowest completion percentage at 57%. I think Noah Fafita is a great quarterback. I just think he had a bad game. I thought T-Mac, even though, you know, he had some great catches, made some great moves, had yards after catch, that fumble there late, just too costly. And I think really, and I'm kind of bearing the lead here when it comes to Arizona's offense, we saw some big plays happen, and then Arizona just couldn't get anything going. They had three opportunities to get a single yard, and they come up empty on a drive. They had 10 drives end in Texas Tech territory, and they only had one touchdown to show for it. Like, that just cannot happen if you're the offense. The defense can only do so much. You know, they had a couple of takeaways. I thought they did a solid job against that high-scoring, potent Texas Tech offense. Tyler Loop had a school record with 5 field goals in this game. Arizona outgained Texas Tech. They had 11 more first downs. Like, you look at the box score, and on paper, you're like, oh, Arizona, they should have won this game. And you're like, wait, they didn't? Like, how the hell did they lose? It was a very confusing loss for Arizona, and I think there's blame to be divvied up all around, but I really think majority of the blame has to fall on the shoulders of the offense.
It's been really interesting, because you look at the box score and you see, yeah, felt like Noah really did spread the ball around. But I think maybe what was missing in that is it was a lot of kind of dink and dunk type stuff, where, like you mentioned last year, Jacob Cowing tied a school record set a school record for touchdowns in a single season. Tanner McLaughlin became this monster that was really a safety valve, but could really burst some things open, where right now it feels like that supporting cast is, you know, yeah, you'll get 4 catches and it'll be for 45 yards, you know, but you don't have that big chunk play, aside from the T-Max of the world, where they had that last year from 3 or 4 different guys.
Yeah. And the offense is kind of like they jab you with a butter knife, and then they just have a play that just goes for the kill. Like, there's just no rhythm to the offense. There's not really any on schedule plays, right? Let's get to 2nd and 4. Let's get to 3rd and short. A lot of these situations for Arizona on 3rd down, they're all 3rd and 8s, 3rd and 7s. And that's just really hard to convert if you're an offense. And the running game also was inconsistent as well. You know, Kwali Conley, I thought, had some good runs, but you can't just have Kwali as your primary rusher, you need to get something going. So this offense, I think they have the talent. I mean, the offensive line I thought was great in that game against Texas Tech. You know, they had some leakage, right? You know, there were, you know, some guys moving around, like Wendell Moy at left guard was in and out because, you know, he was dealing with some stuff. And I thought the offensive line was great. Noah Fifita had all sorts of time to throw, but guys aren't getting open. The offense just doesn't have a rhythm. And I think what's really, really concerning about this Arizona offense right now is that Brent Brennan's talking about wide receivers running wrong routes and running in the wrong direction. And I'm like, man, you had spring and all of training camp to work on stuff like that. Do things happen from time to time? Yes. Like, even sometimes the best quarterback in the world will accidentally line up over a guard before a snap, right? And then, oh, crap, let me get behind the center real quick. You know, stuff like that happens. But if we're talking about game five at this point of the season and wide receivers are running wrong routes, like, that's a coaching problem. And I think, I don't know if Arizona needs to get better players. Like, if there's guys that are currently kind of sitting on the bench that are going to get more reps, but something needs to change. And right now, Arizona's offense, like I said, is going through an identity crisis.
And it doesn't get any easier this week, heading to BYU, the number 14 Cougars. They're 2-0 in conference. They've given up the second fewest points among Big 12 teams. So now let's get into kind of the expectations, expectation versus reality. BYU, Texas Tech, back-to-back weeks. I think those are have to be the two biggest surprise teams in this conference in a good way, where, you know, with Texas Tech, it looks like, yeah, I think Travis Hunter is probably the runaway with the conference player of the year, but Taj Brooks certainly making a case. And you have BYU, which, you know, honestly, going into this year, I thought 13th, 14th best team, and they're rattling off wins. And that's a tough atmosphere that U of A needs to go into this week. So, you know, what's jumped out to you about some of these surprises, either good or bad, with the conference as we're entering the halfway point of the season?
Well, I think the BYU Cougars to me are the biggest surprise, just because I thought this was the year Kalani Sitake was getting let go. I thought, man, Sitake's in the hot seat. They're going to end up going 3-9. They're going to let him go. And Kalani Sitake looks like he's bought himself a few extra years in Provo, because I think the Cougars are much better than we expected. They are so tough on defense. Their quarterback, Retzlaff, I think is awesome. And BYU, they have one of the best home field advantages in the Big 12. Their fans travel as well. Like, they always have a strong contingent of fans behind them. And now that they're winning some football games, they got a lot of momentum going behind them. Honestly, I think probably the biggest surprise to me, it's kind of a negative surprise, I thought Kansas, I know that, you know, ASU beating them, that's a big win for the Sun Devils, but Kansas, man, Jalen Daniels, I thought he was going to be arguably the conference offensive player of the year. And Kansas would be in the upper echelon of teams contending in the Big 12. I've not been impressed with Kansas at all. And then losing at home to UNLV, I know that the Running Rebels are having a good season too, but they just had some bad losses. So I think Kansas and their bad record, I think, is certainly a very big surprise. But, man, I think the entire Big 12, Jordan, is a big surprise, because if you look at the preseason poll and compare it to what it currently is now, it's just completely flip-flopped. I got a lot of guff, by the way. I'm using your platform to pound my chest a little bit, Jordan, because
do it.
I got it. So much guff when I put Iowa State number 2 on my preseason ballot. And I was like, hey, they got 90% of their starters back. I think Matt Campbell's a great coach. Like, I am very high on the Cyclones, and so many people are like, oh, what do you know? What do you know about Iowa State? And now, lo and behold, they look like one of the better teams in the conference. So I told you so.
Matt Campbell season. That was the team I was going to bring up next, was like, and they're quietly doing it. They are now somehow you're quietly 11th in the nation. And yeah, like they, even now they're not really a team that gets brought up when you bring up the Big 12. They're not among the first five teams. And then you also look at, you know, Kansas State, who, you know, after that U of A game, I was like, chalk it up. They're going to the college football playoff. Like that path runs through Manhattan, Kansas. They've had a few stumbles there. And then Oklahoma State, 0-3 in the Big 12.
It's another one.
That is wild. You know, and they were one that it just felt like, you know, whether you get them at home, you get them at away, even if it seems like they have inferior talent, like it's still always just a tough game. And the fact that they are 0-3 certainly jumps out as well. Justin, I know you are tapped in with the Arizona Wildcats morning, noon, and night, but being someone that's still in the state, but a little bit of an outside perspective, what has stood out to you with the Arizona State Sun Devils?
I am the biggest fan of Cam Scataboo, ASU's star running back. He is an absolute bruiser. He is a star and a man amongst boys. Like, I love how he plays and how he runs the football. And I think ASU, while their schedule has favored them a little bit, I still think they've put together some impressive wins. I think dominating at home against Wyoming, I know the Cowboys in the post-Craig Bowl era are rebuilding right now. And, you know, ASU should have won that game, but they won convincingly. And then to beat an SEC team at home in Mississippi State, and then squeaking out a hard trap game at Texas State, you got to tip your cap to ASU and their ability to figure out, you know, ways to win games. And then, you know, they went to Lubbock, Texas, and gave the Red Raiders a run for their money. And then they pulled out one against Kansas. I think that ASU's schedule certainly favored them a little bit, but right now, you know, they only have one loss on the season, but they got four wins. Is that right, Jordan?
Yep, 4-1.
So now ASU is two wins away from becoming bowl eligible. It doesn't get any easier, or it doesn't get any easy, because now you got Utah coming to town on a Friday night game. You got to go on the road and play against Cincinnati. I know Oklahoma State's down, and we just talked about them, but still, going to Stillwater, I think that's going to be a tough game for ASU after a bye. So I think the Sun Devils, they have their work cut out for them. Plus, I didn't even mention UCF, Kansas State, BYU, and the Territorial Cup game, which I think is going to be an all-timer down here in Tucson, Arizona. ASU has a tough schedule ahead, but they can get two wins. And I think going to a bowl game in year two under Kenny Dillingham, I think it shows that this program is certainly on the good path.
Justin Spears, he is everywhere. If you are a college football fan and a U of A fan, make sure to follow him. He's with the Arizona Daily Star, also has a great show each and every morning on ESPN Tucson. Justin, thanks for joining us. Always enjoy chatting with you.
Appreciate you, Jordan.